I want to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the CEO and founder of Prep Expert. Sean, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, John. Just wanted to do a quick shout out for an amazing deal that we have for college admissions process podcast listeners. We're offering 30% off all Prep Expert SAT and ACT courses and tutoring. It's live online. We've got the best score improvement guarantees in the industry. You'll get taught by 99th percentile instructors. And you can save 30% off when you go to the show notes of the College Admissions Process podcast. Grab your discount code for 30% off and click the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Sean. So great to have you again. And to everyone out there, please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission. But rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all and best wishes. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and today it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Jeff Salingo. Now, Jeff is an award-winning journalist who has reported on higher education for more than two decades. His writing has appeared in many major publications, including The Washington Post, The New York Times, The Atlantic, and The Wall Street Journal. He is a special advisor to the president of Arizona State University and has also served as visiting scholar at Georgia Tech. Jeff Salingo is also the best-selling author of many books, including Who Gets In and Why, A Year Inside College Admissions, where Jeff had the opportunity to write about the time he spent in three admissions offices during their application review process. Those schools included the University of Washington, which is a public school, Davidson College, which is a small liberal arts school, and Emory, which, of course, is a private school in the great city of Atlanta, Georgia. Jeff and I met at the NACAC conference in Baltimore, which is the National Association for College Admissions Counseling, and it is a great pleasure to have him here today, as I know he will bring so much value to our audience. So Jeff, welcome, and thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, Jeff. And so let's just start by asking you, can you share a bit more about your background? And talk to us about what inspired you to dive into the world of college admissions, leading to the writing, of course, of the great book, Who Gets In and Why?
So I've been in and around higher ed for more than 25 years. I spent 16 of those years at the Chronicle of Higher Education, where I essentially covered every beat, except admissions, actually. and I was writing a lot about higher education, written two previous books to this one. And most people would ask me two questions all the time about higher education when they found out I was covering colleges and universities. They would say, one, why does college cost so much? And second, why is it so hard to get into college? And to be honest with you, the former question is impossible to answer. The latter question, though, is, I thought it's really actually not as hard as I think people think it is. You know, the average acceptance rate of an American college or university is 65%. So, you know, most of the colleges that we're talking about that are quote unquote hard to get into are among, you know, the most selective colleges and universities in the country. Maybe 200 at the most have a acceptance rate under 50%. So you still, even in those, you still have, you know, institutions that are around 40, 45%, which I think is a pretty good chance. And again, most institutions accept most students. And so that was really what pushed me to write this book, is that I wanted to show exactly how does it work at some of the more selective places so that people understood, okay, that's what it takes to get into the most selective places. How do I get into now everywhere else? And that was the purpose of the book.
Well, we appreciate that intro. And Jeff, what are some of the most surprising insights you gained during your time observing the admissions process firsthand, of course, in the various admissions offices that we mentioned earlier, namely Emory, Davidson, and again, the University of Washington?
Probably, the biggest takeaway is that we tend to think admissions is about the students, is about the seniors applying to college. It has everything to do with the college and university, and not very much to do with the students at all, right? It is very much a process driven by the colleges and universities. It's about their priorities, and their priorities are delivered through the admissions office. Whether that is they want more full payers, they want more kids from a certain geographic part of the country. they could be very narrow in terms of they need a third baseman for the baseball team, things like that. So it is all about their priorities, which is one big takeaway from the book. The second is that it is a process that we spend a lot of time as consumers on. Parents and students spend a lot of time, visiting college, thinking about colleges, and it is over, or a student is accepted pretty quickly. They may be seen a couple of times. They may be seen by a committee. They may be seen by an individual in terms of reading the application. But for the most part, especially at these more selective places that are getting thousands and tens of thousands of applicants in some cases, they may look at an application and consider it for only a couple minutes, sometimes maybe 10 or 15 minutes. So we tend to put a lot of effort into these applications. And it's not that we shouldn't, but we should also realize that on the other side, it's not that they don't put a lot of effort into it, but they have to move quickly in order to get all those applications done in a short amount of time.
And of course, there's so many schools that receive tens of thousands of applications. So you're right. You think about the months, if you will, of time that students put the applications together. And yet on the other side, many times, it's no more than 10 minutes in terms of the review. So Jeff, from your experience, what are some other misconceptions that students and parents have about college admissions?
I think that the biggest misconception I think is that it's hard to get into. I think the second misconception is that I think that they tend to think, the most selective schools are also the most generous in terms of financial aid. And that is true. For those institutions that are among the most selective, where students are on financial aid, right? Most, as I call them in my book, the sellers. These are schools that are inundated with applications. And on top of that, they have very generous financial aid programs, but most of that money, in fact, almost nearly all of it, goes to students who have financial need. The vast majority of colleges and universities are buyers, as I call them in my book. They need to fill their classes. It's not that their education is any lesser. It's very good. There's a lot of good buyers out there. It's just that they can't easily fill their classes like the very, very selective colleges and universities. And so they have to give out a lot of merit aid, which are essentially coupons, discounts. And a lot of students don't realize this until after the admissions process is over, when they're getting their financial aid packages. And I think if students start to think about the world as these buyers and sellers, and that they balance their list between buyers and sellers, college is actually much more affordable, especially for middle and upper middle class families, than they think it is. Because what's been happening in higher education over the last 15, 20 years is essentially we have this barbell that's happening, where the very wealthy can easily pay full price. The poorest students, not that it's easy, but they are getting between Pell Grants and institutional financial aid on the need-based side. They're getting perhaps their entire need met, not everywhere, but again, at some places. But there's this vast middle that they make too much money to qualify for need-based aid, but they don't make enough money to pay for full price. Those are the people that are really getting squeezed out of a lot of places. And I think they really need to pay a lot more attention to the buyers, as I call them.
And Jeff, in your book, Who Gets In and Why, you touch upon a lot, including things like the impact of socioeconomic factors on admissions, which, of course, you just touched upon again right here in this conversation. Can you share examples of how colleges consider applicants' backgrounds and socioeconomic status in their decisions?
Yeah, so colleges are either need blind or need aware. Now, there's a lot of colleges that are need blind in the admissions process, meaning they don't take an applicant's financial background into consideration. But it doesn't mean that they are necessarily generous with financial aid. So some colleges are need blind and meet full need, full demonstrated need. Those are very few colleges that have a lot of money, right? So they don't need to pay attention to who they're accepting money-wise, and then they could give them as much money as they need. A lot of colleges that are need blind gap students. In other words, students demonstrate they need this much money and colleges maybe meet them partway, halfway, whatever way, but they don't give them all the money that they need. Then there's a group of colleges that are need aware. And those colleges basically say, you know what? We could be need blind, but we don't have enough money to give to everybody. So we are actually going to be need aware, meaning we are going to look at your financial background in admissions. And if we feel like we can't give you the money you need, We just don't have enough to go around. We are going to deny you because we think ethically it's better to deny you than accept you but not give you enough money to come here. And there's a big debate in admissions over this. And increasingly, because of the cost of college just keeps going up, more and more students are in that former group I was talking about where they're being gapped. So yes, great that you got into the school, but now you can't afford it.
It's mandated that every college has to make their net price calculator available. Jeff, how accurate is it when a student and their parents use that net price calculator?
Well, some are more accurate than others. Let's just put it that way. I think that those institutions that ask for a lot of data up front are tend to be more accurate on the back end. The problem is you have, so many of those net price calculators really don't necessarily put in what that student might get in merit aid. Again, the more data that schools are asking for up front, the better the results are.
Fantastic. And Jeff, in your book, you spoke about similar rating scales for assessing applicants. I was curious, what do those rating scales look like? Could you talk a little bit about that just to pull the curtain back a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah. So when the application comes in, colleges are rating students on a number of factors, usually around kind of their academic rigor, extracurricular, other personal, so they might have, two or three, four categories, even five categories, and they'll rate them on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 to 10. It's very much like a scale that's used in the Olympics for figure skaters, for example. So one reader might say, oh, I give this student a 10 on academics. Another reader might give them an 8. And then all of those numbers come up together to generate an overall number at many of these places for students. Some of those numbers, most of the decisions by admissions offices are actually pretty easy. You're easily in, you're easily not in. And then there's a group in the middle that is kind of on the bubble. They're either just outside looking in or they're in and they're barely in. And those edge cases are the cases that where most of the time is spent, whether with individuals or with committees.
Fantastic. And Jeff, what about students facing wait lists or even rejections? What insights or advice would you offer in terms of understanding these outcomes and planning for next steps?
Well, it's not only that, it's the thing called the deferral, which is becoming more popular, right? I mean, admissions, when I applied back in the early 1990s, it was a pretty simple system. You applied and you got accepted, you already got denied for the most part, right? But over the years, there's all these enrollment management techniques that colleges and universities have added. So we have early decision. We have early decision one. We have early decision two. We have early action. We have different flavors of those two things, right? We have regular decision. We have deferrals. We have wait lists. So a student, for example, could apply early decision or early action wanting a decision, yes or no. But increasingly what's happening is students or colleges want to keep those students around in the pool because they may need them later on. So they defer them to regular decision, which is really frustrating because if you're a student applying early, you want to have an answer. And if the answer is no, just tell me now. This is really frustrating to me, especially early action, because some schools are deferring perhaps 10, 20, 40, 50, 60% of students, and they're never going to accept those students later on. Then you might get waitlisted in regular decision. And those are students who are put on a waitlist. Sometimes, by the way, the waitlist might be bigger than the entire freshman class at a college. Some students decide they don't want to stay on the waitlist. They've gotten in somewhere else and they'll go somewhere else. But those waitlists now tend to really drag on through the summer. I've heard of students this past year already moved in to a dorm at another college. They got off the wait list at their first choice and they moved out and left, right? So like this process, I think, is not great for students. I think there needs to be a lot more transparency. I think a lot more data should be put in the hands of students so that when, for example, they get deferred in early, how many students were deferred? Oh, wow, everybody was almost deferred, right? Well, right. I'm not going to really get in here. I'm going to move on. Right. I think that the more data that's put in the hands of consumers, the better they are.
So as a follow up, Jeff, your experience inside the admissions office, if a kid is deferred, does reaching out matter? And, what we hear from some of the admissions reps is that if you're going to reach out only if there's something new to add to your application. In other words, from when you submitted the application to the time you get deferred or even waitlisted, don't just reach out unless there's something new to add. What would you say about that?
I agree. You know, I think that there's something about showing interest, and then there's something about being a pain. And it's a fine line between the two, right? You definitely want to show that you're still interested, right? They want to know that. If there's something new to report, report it, but don't report something new every day, and make sure whatever you're reporting is significant and useful, and by the way, hopefully helpful to your case.
Absolutely. And given the ongoing debate around standardized testing, Jeff, how does your research shed light on the role of the SAT or ACT scores in admissions, and what changes or alternatives do you foresee?
I find the whole use of standardized tests. I actually really thought when, you know, 600 plus colleges went test optional during the pandemic that most would come back. And we haven't seen that, right? We've seen a few trickle back into the testing camp. Most have stayed test optional. Now, many of them are really doing rigorous research on how the students did who didn't come in with test scores, and you know, waiting for them to basically cycle through the university or college. That might take 4 or 5 years to really get good data. I'm not quite sure how they're going to disaggregate that from learning loss that happened during the pandemic. I think also they're trying to read the political tea leaves. They're trying to read the faculty tea leaves. I think there's a lot of politics at play here in terms of deciding whether to come back. And there's a lot of competitive pressures. If your competitors are test optional, you want to stay test optional. So I think everyone else is waiting for somebody to go back. And I think that given the huge increase in applications, which I think is partially caused by test optional, I think that most parents and counselors either love it or they hate it. But I find most people hate it because they just want some certainty. It doesn't mean that they want the test. Some people would prefer test blind, like California has gone, the University of California system. Like, either take the test or don't take the test, but don't keep us in this middle ground, which I think is incredibly frustrating to students. I have no idea, John, what's going to happen. I really don't. I predicted wrong the last time, so I'm a little afraid to predict again. I'm curious to see what will happen, but I think something will change in the next couple of years. Either we will see a permanent policy, we will go back. I doubt many people will go test blind. I think people are either going to stay test optional or they will go back to the test.
What's up, podcast friends? I'm happy to share that we've teamed up with Dormco to make your dorm decorating a lot easier. Why Dormco? They offer quality and durability, affordability, and a wide selection for bedding to storage solutions and everything in between for your dorm room. So if you or anyone you know is looking to decorate your dorm, see the affiliate partnership link in the show notes for Dormco, your one stop for stylish, affordable, and quality dorm essentials. Please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission, but rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all, and best wishes. Well, we appreciate that. And Jeff, in your book, you spoke about some select schools dropping their test score requirements to accept students with lower scores while not affecting their overall ratings. Some of those students that don't submit scores submitted things like research projects from high school or clips from performances if they're musicians or actors. With AI becoming ever more available, do you see colleges going towards using clips from performances or examples of other work done in high school? And what other changes do you anticipate, if any?
Well, I do think that colleges and universities will need to try to figure out, like, how do we ensure that the application is not, you know, really done by AI? And I think the essay is a big question around how do we create prompts that are really personalized. We may go to more video clips that show the authentic student. We may go to more essay prompts that can be completed in real time and proctored in some way so that students can't ChatGPT them. We may ask students for other pieces of work from high school, but we really don't know the quality of that or how that was done. I think AI is both a threat and an opportunity to college admissions offices. And I think the threat is how do we make sure that we know the authentic student? I think the opportunity is is there some work now that's done by humans in the admissions office that can be done by AI, which frees up time for these admissions officers to spend time in high schools and recruiting and talking to students and doing other work that's more human-centered and student-facing? So I think it's both a threat and an opportunity, but I think that they will start to think about how can we ask for other assets in the application from students.
Well, I think that's really interesting the way you put it in terms of putting AI in the position to help admissions offices. And, you know, we know that there are so many that receive tens of thousands of applications when we're talking about the big schools. Jeff, as a follow-up, you also spoke in your book, Who Gets In and Why, about a national clearinghouse for all students, just like the NCAA serves for potential student athletes, where students would include samples of their work from throughout their high school years. What do you think are the factors preventing, for example, the U.S. Department of Education from making this a reality?
There have been so many ideas over the years, a lottery system, a matching system like we use for medical residents and things like that. Everything keeps coming down to colleges and universities to make a lot of these things a reality would need to share information about applicants that they have received and what they're deciding on and things like that. And this all comes down to there is a strong desire by the U.S. government for antitrust, right? That they do not want collusion, essentially, among the colleges and universities. They don't want them talking about to each other about who's being accepted and how much money they're getting and things like that. And almost anything that would require a matching system or a clearinghouse or anything like that would require some sort of cooperation between colleges and universities. Now, could there be a system where students upload their information and then colleges say, oh yeah, we really want that student? That could be done. And in fact, in some ways, we're starting to see that with early experiments in direct admissions, where students, you know, either information that colleges already have on students or information that students are putting in the Common App, basically colleges are raising their hand without the student even applying and saying, you're in, right? No application necessary. I think that has a limit to how many institutions will participate in something like that and how many students will participate in that, because it would be mostly the less selective places that would do that. I still think that we need something where the vast majority of colleges and universities have access to students and that there is more of a matching system, because right now it's a pretty, it's not exactly a efficient system. If you were designing this from scratch in 2023, you would not design a system where students apply to 15, 20 schools. They might get into 5 or 10 schools, and then they only could go to one, right? That is a system that's full of friction, and you would not design it that way if you're designing from scratch. So something has to change. Again, I'm just not quite sure legally what you can do and practically what you can do.
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, you mentioned students applying to 15 schools. There's a lot of high achieving students out there. So in terms of high achieving students who often face unique challenges in the admissions process, what advice do you have for them, and how can they stand out in a competitive pool?
So I always encourage students, just kind of be yourself. Do what you want to do in high school, because if you sit there throughout high school and say, how am I going to stand out to an admissions officer on the other side of the desk? First of all, you have no idea who that person is sometimes. You have no idea what kind of day they're having when they read your application. As I said earlier, colleges have priorities. All those priorities are different from college to college. So if you sit there and try to game the system from where you sit, you're really going to drive yourself crazy doing it. You're not going to have a lot of fun doing it. You're going to end up doing things you probably don't want to really do, because you're just going to be doing it for the admissions officer on this other side of the desk. Should you participate in a lot of activities in high school? Sure. Should you do some of that for college? Sure. Should you do some of that because you just want to have fun and discover new things? Absolutely. Should you take a pretty rigorous course load in high school? Absolutely, because it will prepare you well no matter where you go to college, right? Should you try your best? Sure, because that's what you want to do. You want to have that growth mindset in high school. Do all of these things because they're going to make you a better learner. They're going to make you a better person. They're going to help you discover what is your passion and purposes in life. Don't do it because you're trying to get into college.
Well, we appreciate that. You talk about taking the rigorous course load, which of course is going to differ from student to student. Try your best, participate in activities, and students always remember the growth mindset. These are things that you control. And then Jeff pointed out a lot of priorities in terms of what you don't control. If a school is looking for a certain amount of students applying to a major, if they're looking for a goalie for their soccer team, those are things that you don't control unless, in fact, you're a goalie. So, Jeff, this has been a great conversation. We really appreciate the insight and your time today. Before I get to the last question, is there a question I didn't ask or a topic that I didn't bring up that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
No, I think that I think the last question that you asked me is the one that I'm really pressing on parents and students today. I think we have turned the admissions process into a game to be won, that there's this gold ring at the end of it, and we are driving ourselves and our kids crazy. We're really punishing them in ways that I don't think they deserve it. And I'm starting to see this even, you know, I have an eighth grader, and once in a while, obviously she knows what I do and she's asking me questions about college. You know, I never thought about college until I was a junior in high school. Was that maybe too late? Maybe, I don't know. But I've turned out okay. We know a lot of people who've turned out okay, even if they didn't go to the most selective places. I think we really need to turn the temperature down on this. We've been talking about doing that for a long time. The question that I would love you to ask me, but I can't answer because I want to ask every parent out there, like, we know what's wrong. We know we're crushing our kids, and colleges know they're crushing their kids. Everybody knows they're doing something wrong. Nobody's willing to fix it.
Well, that's great advice and great insight. We appreciate that, Jeff. And again, your time today, thank you so much. And unfortunately, it does lead us to the last question, which is, based on your extensive research and observations, what predictions or changes do you foresee in college admissions, and how might these impact future applicants?
Well, I think that the one struggle that colleges and universities are having right now is around yield, right? So as application numbers have gone way up, even the more selective places are really having trouble figuring out yield. And so I think you're going to see, colleges have already leaned in more to early decision because of this, because it's essentially 100% yield. What I think you're going to see is a lot more, and I think this is where AI could come in, colleges trying to figure out, are you just applying to us because you want to throw out an application there? I met somebody yesterday, actually, whose daughter was accepted into the University of Georgia. And now she wants to apply to a couple of other colleges, even though she's probably going to end up going to Georgia, because she just wants to see if she could get in. Well, that's all fine and good for the student, but the college is going to really hate that. And they're going to want to start to figure out how many of these kids are really serious about that. That's the prediction I'm going to say, is that they're going to go beyond early action, early decision, and they're going to try to figure out things to figure out, like, how much is this student really interested in us?
Well, that's a great point. Like you said, someone who got into one school and she's applying to others just to see if she could get in. So think about it from the admission side. You have 1,000 seats, you receive 50,000 applications, let's say, and you don't know who's for real or not, which makes the entire process ever more difficult. So I appreciate that insight, Jeff. And I'm also going to link your book, Who Gets In and Why, A Year Inside College Admissions. Folks, if you haven't read it, you definitely have to read it. And I'm not getting paid for saying it. This is a great book. Jeff is the real deal. He's awesome. I'm going to link all of his books in the show notes. And Jeff, by the way, I hear you have a podcast. You want to give it a little bit of a shout out there?
Yeah, Future You. It's Future You. I co-host it with Michael Horn. It talks about everything about the future of higher education. So give it a listen.
Jeff, you are awesome. I'm so glad that we connected down at NACAC in Baltimore. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. And to all the people out there, good luck with the college search. We hope to have you again, Jeff.
Great to be here. And thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP. What's up, podcast friends? I'm happy to announce that we've teamed up with some fantastic affiliate partners to further enhance your overall college journey. They are Dormco, Prep Expert, and Prep Sportswear. So do you or someone you know need stylish dorm decor? trendy college apparel, or top-notch test prep, whether it's creating a cozy home away from home, flaunting the latest in college apparel, or securing top-notch test prep help, we've got you covered. Check out our affiliate links in the show notes within each of these categories, which we believe will help you, our listeners. Please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast does get a small commission. But rest assured, we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. So check out the links in the show notes and share with anyone that you think may benefit. Thank you and best wishes to all.